Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most, because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D, and today I've got something special for y'all. I've been fighting a serious cold for the past week and a half, and my voice just isn't at 100% yet, and there's no way I could make it through an entire episode. But that's not all bad news, because my friend Holly is here with the case of Renee Marsden. Some of you might remember Holly. I've featured her podcast, Crimeaholics, on the show before. Crimeaholics is no longer releasing new episodes, but our girl has a brand new show all of her own. Her new show, Crime with Holly, still covers both the missing and murdered in a respectful and victim-focused way. She highlights cases that you may have never heard about and brings the attention to missing persons cases that desperately need it. And we love that around here. Huge thank you to Holly for sharing this episode with us. And y'all be sure to check her out if you haven't already. I love her and I know you will too. Her episodes drop weekly and I'll post all her links in the show notes to make it easy. Now, I'm gonna go take a Motrin or something. So without further ado, let's join Holly as she tells us all about the case of Renee Marsden in Sydney, Australia.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. I'm your host, Crimeaholly. Trigger warning for this episode. This episode, as you can see, is titled something different than I have covered here on Crime with Holly. It's called The Death of Renee Marsden, because Renee took her own life. She was not murdered in the normal meaning of the word. She very much took her own life. However, you will see that her blood is on someone else's hands. I feel like this episode is really going to open up a conversation that I think a lot of us have never thought about before, which is a really good thing. I think this episode will really get us thinking about someone's actions and how those actions can drive another human to take their life. And what consequences should that individual face? This case covers some very serious and heavy things, and I just want to say that if you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, to please contact 988, which is the Suicide Prevention Hotline. You can also visit 988lifelong.org. I will also include resources in the description of this episode for anyone who may need them. Additionally, if this topic is something that is triggering for you, please just skip this episode. Today's episode is also going to be my first case that I am covering on my new podcast that takes place outside of the United States. With that said, please know that I am American. I try my hardest to properly say the names and places from other countries, but I am human. I mean absolutely no harm if I accidentally mispronounce something. Just know that it is a complete accident and it happens. I have been completely drug over the coals before for accidentally saying something wrong, and truly, it's a mistake. Little did you know, I often Google the pronunciation of things or places that I'm not familiar with, and even sometimes, surprise, surprise, Google gets it wrong. So y'all just be nice and bear with me. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into the death of Renee Marsden. Renee Marsden was born on October 15, 1992, in Prairiewood, Fairfield City, New South Wales, Australia. She was born to her parents, Teresa and Jamie. At the age of two, Renee's parents split up, and there isn't a lot of information about the split, but it sounds like Renee didn't have much of a relationship with her biological father. At the age of five, Renee's mother met a man by the name of Mark Marsden. A year after the two started dating, Renee and Teresa moved in with Mark, and in the year 2000, the two got married. They eventually had three more children, Luke, Jake, and Monique. Now, from what I can tell, the moment Mark came into Renee's life, he became dad to her. Mark raised Renee as if she was his own, and he loved her very much. At the age of 18, Renee took the Marsden last name. Renee was a wonderful and loving big sister, and she was very close with her family, but she was even closer to her mom. Her mom was her absolute world, and they were the best of friends. Renee even had a tattoo down her side that said, quote, "Life is beautiful because of you, Mom," end quote. And she got that for her mom and surprised her with it on Mother's Day. So on August 5th, 2013, when Renee came home from work and walked into the house, Teresa immediately could tell that something was wrong with Renee. She seemed deflated. She wasn't her normal bubbly, smiley self. Something obviously was bothering her. Teresa asked her if she was all right, and Renee just told her, "I'm okay, Mom. Everything's fine," and she walked upstairs to her room. A short time later, Teresa's phone went off with a text notification, and it was a text message from a young man by the name of Braden Spiteri. Braden was Renee's boyfriend, and the two had been in a relationship for a year and a half. The text message that Braden sent to Teresa said, quote, "Sort your daughter out. She's threatening to kill herself," end quote. That was a bit of shock for Teresa to read, and she immediately went upstairs to her daughter's room to talk with her. When she walked in, Renee was sitting on the edge of her bed, and she sat down with her and showed her the text message that she got from Braden. She asked her daughter if she needed to be concerned, and she tried to talk with her about what was going on. She said it was all stupid, she's not that dumb, she would never do something like that, and that she finally found out what Braden was all about. She reassured her mom that she didn't have to worry about Braden anymore. Things between them were over, and the two were done for good. Now, the relationship between Renee and Braden was not your conventional relationship. The two had actually never physically met because Braden was in prison. Braden was in prison for manslaughter, and the two had only ever communicated online and through text messages. But the relationship between them was very strong. Renee was completely committed to waiting for Braden to get out of prison. She was in love with him, and she was really wrapped up in who he was. They had even made plans of getting married sometime after Renee's 21st birthday, and she had an appointment set up for November 30th, 2013, to speak with a wedding photographer. On that August 5th, it was a complete shock to Renee when Braden sent a text message saying, quote, "I think I need a break, and so do you." After receiving that message, Renee and Braden would exchange an additional 91 messages. After chatting for a few minutes with Renee, Teresa left the room to give her daughter some space. A few hours later, she went in to check on Renee, and she found that Renee was getting herself ready to leave the house. Renee was reapplying her makeup. She asked her what she was doing, and she told her that she was going to go out to dinner with some friends from work. Teresa asked if Renee would be gone long, and she replied with no. Renee was never one to stay out late, and she was very responsible for a 20-year-old young lady. Beyond the brief conversation about the breakup, Renee gave no other indications that anything was wrong before leaving the house. Overall, despite being down, she did seem like her normal self, and she was doing and saying normal things. Instead of driving to a restaurant to meet up with friends, Renee drove to a place called The Gap. The Gap is an ocean cliff at South Head in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, Australia. The Gap is also a well-known place for suicides, and reportedly around 50 suicides take place there each year. Just before 6 p.m., Renee sent her mother one final text message telling her how much she loved her, how sorry she was, and that she was her best friend. Teresa didn't really know what to think of this message, so she went over to a friend's house to talk to her about it. And it was that friend that suggested that Teresa call the police. As soon as they were notified, the police put out an alert for officers to be on the lookout for Renee and her car. While the police were beginning to look for Renee, Teresa was doing whatever she could to find her daughter. She called Camilla Zaidan, who was Renee's best friend of 5 years, and asked her if she had heard from Renee. Camilla said yes, that she had gotten a text message from her where she was telling her that she loved her and she was sorry. Camilla asked Teresa what was wrong, and that is when Teresa told her that Renee hadn't come home and they didn't know where she was. Camilla jumped into action and wanted to help search for her best friend. She told Teresa that she would come over immediately, pick her up, and the two could drive around to different locations that Camilla knew that Renee frequented. Camilla took Teresa to a McDonald's, but Renee wasn't there. And then they drove to Glen Haven, where Braden's sister apparently lived. They pulled up outside of the house and Teresa went to get out of the car, but Camilla pointed out that Renee's car wasn't there. She probably wasn't there either. And if she was being honest, she really didn't know if Braden's sister still actually lived in that house. While Camilla and Teresa were out searching, the police quickly tracked Renee's phone pings and it led them to Watson's Bay, which is located near the Gap. Around 9 p.m., police notified Teresa and Mark that they had located Renee's car, but not Renee. Teresa recalls in an interview that she remembers getting upset because the police took the car for inspection. She worried that Renee had went on a walk and that when Renee got back to her car, it would be gone and she wouldn't know what to do. Inside the car, they found a Valentine's Day card from Braden, an old iPhone that Renee stopped using a few months prior, and they also found that Renee had used her finger to write, "I love you, Braden," on one of the windows. After learning where her car was, Mark and Teresa went to the area and conducted their own search. They walked around in the dark yelling for their daughter, just trying to find any sign of her. After a few hours, they went home to try and get a couple hours of rest, but come daybreak, they were back searching. That morning, Teresa and Mark found Renee's shoes. This was completely devastating for her parents, and I can't even begin to fathom their pain. The police at this point knew that it wasn't good, and so they just told the Marstons to go home and begin planning a funeral. CCTV footage did catch Renee near the cliffside before she slipped out of view. Unfortunately, Renee's body was never recovered, and it is believed that she was likely swept out to sea after she jumped. Mark and Teresa were angry, and they felt like Braden was responsible for Renee taking her life. They tried to contact Braden, but he never responded. So they turned to Camilla, Renee's best friend, to hopefully get some answers. Camilla was the only person who had actually met Braden in person because the two had previously dated, and it was Camilla who introduced Renee to him. But her parents were a little shocked and taken aback by the fact that when they contacted Camilla, she seemed more concerned with Braden's well-being than actually mourning the loss of her best friend. She told Teresa and Mark that she had spoken to Braden on the phone and he was very upset about what had happened and he was hurting over all of it. And she said that everyone just needed to leave Braden alone so he could mourn and not have everyone blaming him for her death. Teresa told Camilla that they handed over Braden's phone number to police and that is when Camilla's demeanor completely changed. She told the Marstons that they had to get the number back from the police, and things that she just kept saying weren't making sense. Now, I'm going to stop here and switch gears a little bit to kind of give a backstory leading up to this point. So, in 2009, Renee was working at a hair salon as an apprentice, and that is when she met a man by the name of Angus. Angus was a customer of the salon, and because Renee was in training at that time, she was in charge of washing the hair and massaging the heads of clients. When Angus came in for a haircut, that is when he saw Renee, and she washed and massaged his head before turning him over for a haircut. Angus was immediately drawn in by her bubbly personality, and he would make frequent trips into the salon even though he really didn't need a haircut. He just wanted to see Renee. And it wasn't long before the two started dating and they had a beautiful relationship. They had talked about their futures together and had even planned that someday they would have 4 kids together. Angus describes this relationship as a beautiful and loving relationship. So when it ended very abruptly, with no real rhyme or reason, he was very confused and couldn't understand what he did wrong. But what Angus didn't know was that Renee's best friend Camilla had a very large role in the ending of their relationship. Camilla did not like Angus, and she would badmouth him to Renee. She started feeding Renee with all of these stories and lies about how Angus was using her for sex, how he was cheating on her, and she really just kind of poisoned Renee's mind with all of this nonsense. She pushed and pushed enough that Renee started to believe what she was saying was true. So she broke things off with Angus despite her being desperately in love with him. Teresa recalls the night that Renee ended it with Angus and how heartbroken Renee was. She cried and cried over it. But Camilla was there to support Renee through it all. She was also encouraging of Renee to begin dating around again and to talk to other people. Camilla had one person in mind that she thought would be the perfect match for Renee, and that was Braden Spiteri. Because Camilla and Renee had been best friends since 9th grade, Renee trusted Camilla to know exactly who she was looking for and who would be a good fit for her. So when Camilla told Renee that she had to start talking to her ex-boyfriend Braden, Renee willingly agreed. The two began texting, and it wasn't long before Renee was telling Teresa about the new guy that she had been talking to. At first, Teresa was hesitant about the idea. Renee and Angus had just broken up, and she felt like Renee was moving on a bit quickly. But Renee told her mom that it would be fine. This guy was great. She met him through Camilla. All would be well. Renee explained to her mom that Braden was a little bit older, he was 24 years old, and that the two were forced to kind of take things slow and really get to know each other because Braden was serving time in prison for manslaughter in Goulburn Jail. Renee explained that Braden had been involved in a motorcycle accident where his best friend Richie, who was a passenger on the back of the bike at the time, died. Because of that, he was charged with manslaughter and was in the middle of serving his sentence when Camilla introduced him to Renee. She said that Camilla had arranged for Braden to have a cell phone while in prison through his lawyer. Braden's family apparently had a lot of money, so they could kind of bend the rules to get their way. But even though he had this phone, he had to be very secretive with it so other inmates wouldn't know and so he wouldn't get into any kind of trouble. So he couldn't make phone calls out to anybody, he could only text. Braden was also unable to have visitors while in prison because he forfeited his right to visitations in exchange for a shorter sentence. Now, when Teresa heard all of this, she wasn't so sure that it was a good idea for her daughter to be communicating with someone in prison. But because he seemed to make her happy and he currently was locked up and unable to physically be there around her daughter, she kept her concerns to herself. Renee was over the top happy, and Braden and Renee spoke every single day. Braden was perfect. He wanted all of the same things Renee wanted. He said all of the right things and always made time to text Renee or message her over Facebook. He made her feel special. At one point after the two started their relationship, Teresa had messaged her daughter something over Facebook. And to her surprise, Braden was the one that responded on Renee's Facebook. And it took her by surprise that Braden had her daughter's passwords. And so she was a bit rude in her reply back to Braden, telling him that she wanted to speak to her daughter, not him. Renee became upset with Teresa over how she spoke to Braden and asked her to please not speak to her boyfriend that way again. Teresa was adamant with her daughter that this was a big red flag, that this man had her passwords and was writing messages to people from her account. this was just the start of Brayden creating a wedge between Renee and her mom. Now, even though Renee had moved on to Brayden, Teresa remained Facebook friends with Renee's ex-boyfriend and first love, Angus. She really liked Angus and enjoyed keeping up with what he was doing in his life. At one point, Angus had posted something on Facebook that Teresa commented on, and the next thing she knew, she was receiving a nasty message from Brayden telling her how disgusting she was to be communicating to her daughter's ex-boyfriend. He even went as far as telling her that she was horrible and an unfit mother. Teresa was absolutely floored that Brayden would speak to his girlfriend's mother like that. And with things between Teresa and Renee already being tense, Teresa and Mark decided just to let it go and not make a big deal over it with Renee. They were worried that if they continued to voice their concerns and voice their distaste for Brayden, Renee would continue to pull away from them. The relationship continued to progress and get more and more intense. There were times when Renee would call Brayden on the phone and talk to him for hours, but he would never verbally say anything back. He would reply to all of the things that she was saying by text message, explaining to her again that if anyone in prison heard him talking, it could mean trouble. Renee was absolutely head over heels in love with Brayden. And in January 2012, she and Camilla went to a tattoo shop called Bondi Ink. This is where Renee got the name B. Spiteri tattooed on the right side of her chest. And that was just a few months after they started dating. And that just goes to show how committed to this relationship that Renee was, that she would get this tattooed on her. Now, let's get back to after Renee took her life. As I mentioned earlier, her car was found with an old iPhone inside. The phone was one that she hadn't used in a few months because she got a new one, and her newest phone was never recovered, and it is believed that Renee threw it over the cliff before she herself jumped. Now, for months after Renee took her life, the police were working on her case, still trying to figure out what led her to do that. And so they had possession of that old iPhone. Now, I'm not really sure exactly why, but for whatever reason, they were never able to unlock the phone and get into it, which I find kind of odd, but maybe they didn't have the technology or the resources or something. It was 2013, so I feel like they should have been able to do that, but either way, police couldn't. So they gave the phone back to Teresa and Mark, and it happened to be that Luke, Renee's 13-year-old brother, had a friend who thought that he could get into Renee's old phone. He informed the Marsdens that there was an app that you only had to pay $100 for, and once you did, you were able to download all of the information off of the phone. So they downloaded the app, hooked the phone up to their computer, and within minutes, they had thousands upon thousands of text messages at their fingertips. They found that between March 2013 and June 2013, Renee had exchanged over 11,000 text messages, and most of those messages were between Renee and Brayden and Renee and Camilla. Mark spent hours scouring these text messages to find any kind of pattern, and he quickly noticed something very interesting that nobody suspected. Months after the death of their daughter, Mark and Teresa Marsden were searching for clues and answers as to how their seemingly happy 20-year-old daughter could intentionally take her life. They knew her relationship with her boyfriend ended, but how did things get so intense between the two? While looking for patterns in her text message exchanges, Mark noticed a trend. When Brayden and Renee were texting back and forth, Camilla would be silent. When there was a break between the messages between Renee and Brayden, that is when Camilla would start texting Renee. I can't imagine the amount of hours that Mark spent looking into these messages. He went as far as plotting all of this in an Excel spreadsheet with dates, times, and how many messages were exchanged. these text messages between Renee and Brayden and Renee and Camilla never mixed. She was never texting the two at the exact same time. This led Mark to the conclusion that Camilla was Brayden and that her daughter had been catfished. I think most people are familiar with the term catfishing, but in case you're not, it's when one person lures someone into a relationship by the means of a fictional online persona. Someone pretends to be someone they are not. When Mark made this discovery, he handed over the information to the police, and they were able to determine that the messages all came from the same cell phone tower, leading the authorities to also believe that Renee was texting the same person. With this new revelation, her family really started to examine all that they knew about Camilla. The more they thought about things, the more they realized just how obsessed Camilla was with Renee. One of Renee's cousins named Stephanie told Teresa that Renee had confided in her that Camilla had once held Renee against the wall and made sexual advances towards her. In an interview, her same cousin described how Camilla really created this major wedge between Renee and her. She said that Camilla was always jealous of Stephanie. She never wanted her to go to the movies with Stephanie, go clubbing with her, or stay over at her house. Anything that Renee would do, Camilla would follow. When Renee enrolled in courses to become a hairdresser, Camilla did too. And any time that Renee would get a boyfriend, Camilla got really nasty. If there was ever a time that Camilla couldn't physically be with Renee, she would be texting and calling her nonstop. Her cousin Stephanie recalls a time when she and Renee were headed somewhere, and it was about a 50-minute drive to wherever they were going. And during that time, Camilla had called 16 times, and Stephanie even questioned Renee about it and expressed how weird it was. And Renee just shrugged it off and said it was fine. Since all of this came to light, Teresa also came to the conclusion that Camilla must have despised the fact that she and her daughter were so close. And that is why Brayden constantly tried to create a bigger wedge between them. So as I mentioned earlier, their relationship went on for 18 months or a year and a half, but there was a short stint where things were put on hold. And that was after Teresa told Renee, and then also told Brayden in a text message, that if he was half of a man, then he would leave her daughter alone until he was out of prison. It was just after that that Brayden told Renee that he agreed with her mom and wanted Renee to do whatever she had to do while he was in prison, but told her that when she got out, she was his. And Renee agreed. So while things were silent from Brayden, or Camilla technically, Renee began living her life again. She started going out with friends and even started seeing a guy by the name of Ian that she worked with. She was so excited to tell her mom about him, but told her mom that he was 12 years older than her. And despite him being older, Teresa and Mark were just elated that it seemed like Renee was moving on from Brayden and beginning to live again. Ian treated Renee so good, and she was incredibly happy with him. But it wasn't long before Camilla was getting jealous, and she reactivated Brayden. Brayden began sending threatening messages to Ian saying how dare he date Renee, Renee was his, he loved her, they're going to get married after he gets out of prison, and so many other things. At the same time, Brayden was also texting Renee. Ian was shocked by these messages, and he went to Renee asking her to make a decision. She either was going to be with him and cut Brayden out of her life completely, or they were going to be done. And sadly, Renee picked Brayden. And this is when their relationship began again. As the relationship started to heat up again, Renee started pulling away from Camilla. Renee was getting tired of the way Camilla was towards her, and she had made plans to end their friendship when Camilla went on a month-long vacation to the United States. At the same time Camilla was going on this vacation, Brayden was going into his parole hearing, and for whatever reason, he told Renee that he would not have his phone. While both Camilla and Brayden were off the radar, Renee opened up to her mother about her wanting to end the friendship with Camilla. She told Teresa that for years she had been putting up with abuse from Camilla, and she was ready to be done with her. She told her mom that the last straw was when she was driving down the road and Camilla tried to grab the steering wheel in an attempt to make them crash. She grabbed Renee's hair, pulling it, and punched her in the head. Renee felt like Camilla was trying to kill her, and that was the end for her. She was ready to be done. So the moment that Camilla's airplane left for the United States, Renee sent her a long text message how the friendship was done and she had no interest in ever seeing her again. Renee finally felt free of Camilla, and she wrote about it in a letter that she wrote to Brayden that was later found in her bedroom. In this letter, Renee expressed her love for Brayden, how she was finally free of Camilla, and how she cannot wait to be with him when he got out of prison. During the month that Camilla was in the States, Renee continued to text Brayden's phone, even though she knew he wouldn't see them until he got his phone back after his parole hearing. In these messages, she was making big plans and telling him all about them, and they did not include Camilla. So when Camilla landed back in Australia and powered on her two phones, she was shocked to read the messages that Renee had sent to both Camilla and Brayden. That is when Camilla sent the first text message from Brayden's phone on August 5th that said, quote, "I think I need a break and so do you." Camilla could have easily ended this entire thing so differently, yet she chose to be so blunt and brutal towards Renee, and it caused Renee so much distress and heartache. The messages that were exchanged between Brayden and Renee after he broke things off with her were never recovered, and to this day we do not know what was said during their 91 text message exchange. But Teresa can only imagine that it was extremely abusive given the tone that Brayden used with her when he texted telling her to sort her daughter out because she was threatening to take her life. The only person still alive today that knows what was said in those messages is Camilla. As I mentioned earlier, Renee's phone she was using at that time has never been recovered. And when police finally conducted a search of Camilla's home, she had disposed of the phone and the SIM card that she used to pose as Brayden. And unfortunately, at that time in 2013, the telephone service provider's data expired after 7 days. So they were unable to get that information. But whatever was said between the two drove Renee to take her own life. And Camilla knew the risk she was taking with Renee's life while exchanging these messages because she texted that warning to Teresa. Camilla had ample opportunity that day to come clean to Renee or even come clean to Teresa on who Brayden Spiteri truly was. Had she messaged Teresa with the truth instead of posing as Brayden, Teresa may have been able to prevent her daughter's suicide. And even after her death, Camilla still couldn't do the right thing. Just 2 days after the death of her daughter, Camilla came to Teresa telling her how awful Renee was to her. To Teresa's surprise, all of the things that Renee had told her about the abuse she endured from Camilla was now claiming to Teresa that it was Renee who was the violent one. Teresa was beside herself that Camilla would show up to her home after she had lost her daughter and say all of these awful things about Renee. It was just very strange to Teresa that Camilla was trying to turn this around and make it about herself. And let me remind you that when she had shown up saying all of these things, this was before they had uncovered the truth about who Brayden was. So because catfishing isn't illegal, Camilla was never arrested for any wrongdoing. She never faced any kind of charges. There was technically no crimes committed because Camilla did not demand money, she was not stalking her by the law's standards, and she was not being threatening towards Renee or harassing her. For 7 years, Renee's case stood still, but the Marsdens were not giving up. And after heavy pressure from the Marsdens, a coronial inquest was finally held. Camilla gave evidence at the inquest and she was given immunity from prosecution if she admitted to any kind of crimes in return for her testimony. Everyone in Renee's family were hopeful that Camilla would finally tell the truth about what had happened and what had went on since she was given immunity. And instead of coming clean, Camilla chose to tell another lie. Camilla claimed that both she and Renee were involved in the creation of Brayden and that they did it to hide their sexual relationship that the two young women were having together. Camilla said, quote, "We were never going to be accepted. She wasn't allowed to be around me. We made the character that way she was allowed to see me," end quote. The Marsdens were livid. They did not believe a single word out of Camilla's mouth. During the coroner's court, text messages were shown as evidence that Renee had no idea that Camilla was Brayden. Brayden had even stated in a text to Renee that Renee should have sex with Camilla to get her anger out, and Renee had texted back with a firm no. It was also revealed that Renee had even sent sexual images and videos to Brayden requesting that he send some back, but he never did. The coroner pretty much told Camilla that he knew she was lying. They had evidence that she was lying. It's time to come clean. But she stuck with that story. When researching this case and seeing all of the people who've been affected by Camilla's actions, it's more than just her parents. Her siblings lost their big sister, and Renee's brother Luke, who was 13 at the time, takes it extremely hard. Her entire family has to deal with the repercussions of Camilla's actions. Renee's first love, Angus, the man she met while washing his hair at the hair salon, the man that Camilla made up lies about to get Renee to dump him, wonders what could have been. He is left angry and upset that someone could manipulate someone so badly and do all of these crazy things, yet face no consequences. And what is so sad about all of this is that Camilla still lives near the Marsdens, and they often bump into each other at the grocery store. Camilla is living her life like nothing happened. She's gone on to get married and have children of her own, and I can only hope that she is haunted by what she did. Though she physically did not murder Renee, her actions and manipulations is what pushed Renee literally over the edge of a cliff. Renee fell to her death believing that Brayden was real. She had no idea that she was being catfished, no idea that the person she considered her best friend of 5 years was the mastermind behind an astonishing deception. Renee felt like she couldn't live without Brayden, and it just hurts my heart so much that she was hurting so badly over such an evil lie. In Australia, and even here in the United States, there isn't really any catfishing laws that criminalize catfishing. If catfishing involves the extortion of money or goes a bit further using copyrighted material, then it can be penalized, but typically catfishing is perfectly legal. And because they do not have any kind of proof about what was said in those 91 messages, it is unknown if Camilla, or Brayden, if you will, encouraged Renee to take her life, which that would then become a crime. So Camilla has been able to walk away free from all of this and has never looked back. The Marsdens are fighting for changes in the law and have pushed to introduce Renee's law, which will outlaw catfishing. They believe catfishing should be illegal and that you should be penalized for creating a false persona and then using that persona to manipulate, control, and mentally abuse someone. There is a change.org petition I will share in the description of this episode that you can sign and show your support for the Marsdens and what they are trying to do. I am really interested in hearing your guys' thoughts on all of this. Do you think that laws should be more strict and hold people accountable for emotional and mental abuse and manipulation? Make sure that you guys are in my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. We can have an open discussion about this because I truly want to hear your thoughts. Also, if anyone is interested in reading the 51-page inquest that has a ton of details about the communications between Renee and Brayden and Camilla, it will be linked in the description of this episode. It is very lengthy and goes in way more details about the communications, the abuse, and so on. It is very interesting to read, so I highly recommend you guys checking it out if you have the time. If you guys aren't following me already on Instagram, make sure you do so. You can find me over there at Crimeaholly. I've been very active over there recently and enjoying the opportunity to connect with everybody over there. Lastly, if you'd like more true crime content, you can follow me over on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. That is all for this week's episode. Until next time, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.